From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. We're broadcasting live just outside of Cincinnati, Ohio, where we had a regional Watchman on the Wall pastor's briefing today at Prince and Pike Church of God. They hosted us. I'll be joined a little later in the program by the pastor there, Barry Clardy. But first, a GOP lawmaker is demanding some answers from the FBI after he says the Bureau admitted to working with the controversial anti-Christian Southern Poverty Law Center. In just a moment, we'll talk with the author of that letter, Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida. We'll also get his reaction to yesterday's firing of the infamous texting FBI agent, Peter Strzok. Also, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan admitted he ignored a U.S. deadline for releasing Pastor Andrew Brunson as his country faces severe financial difficulties. Sam Brownback, Ambassador Large for International Religious Freedom, will join us with the latest on Pastor Brunson. And yesterday, President Donald Trump signed into law a $717 billion defense policy bill, which authorizes a wave of significant military increases, including service member the pay raises for service members, the biggest boost in nearly a decade. Higher troop levels and new equipment and weapons for the upcoming fiscal year. The military, finally, back on the right track. We'll discuss the significance of the NDAA with FRC's own executive vice president, who is a retired lieutenant general. You know him, Jerry Boykin. And speaking of the military, also get his thoughts on the reported Taliban resurgence in Afghanistan. All of that coming up on this edition of Washington Watch. I tell you what, we can pack it in 1 hour. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at TPerkins. And folks, let me remind you of the new tool we have for your toolkit. That's right, your conservative activist toolkit. If you don't have the Stand Firm app, you need to get it. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over, or just go to an app store. Stand Firm app gives you alerts, legislative alerts. It has what means and ways of contacting your members of Congress. And most of all, it alerts you to Washington Watch, lets you know when it's ready, when it's time to listen to Washington Watch. And it's a great app for your friends who are not fortunate enough as you are to live in an area that has a station that carries Washington Watch, although we're now approaching 300 stations in 40-plus different states. The app comes in handy. So get the app. Stand Firm. All right, a member of Congress has sent a letter to the Assistant Director of Congressional Affairs at the FBI demanding an accounting for the relationship with the FBI, between the FBI and the anti-Christian Southern Poverty Law Center. The author of that letter is Congressman Matt Gaetz, who represents the 1st Congressional District of Florida. He serves on the House Armed Services Committee and the House Judiciary Committee, and he joins us now. Congressman Gaetz, welcome to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Tony. And I was trying to figure out how to get on the App Store while I was on hold, so that I could get the Stand Firm app. It probably could be helpful for members of Congress as well.
Well, I know there's some that could use it. It'll be helpful, but it also gives it's activism in a pocket. I mean, it helps you.
We need that. Look, I mean, those of us who are fighting on Capitol Hill, we need the force multiplier. We need people of faith. We need conservatives. We need people who love this country and are patriotic to get engaged and involved. When Washington is left to its own devices, bad things happen. The more we can inspire the imagination of the people we serve, the better off we'll all be as a country.
Well, I often say our republic is not a spectator sport. It is a participatory sport. We have to have everybody engaged, and that's what we're trying to do, is give folks the tools. And you're right. It comes in handy for folks like you who are on Capitol Hill trying to do the right thing, to have the people of the country standing behind them and knowing what's going on. And as you know, Matt, the media is not telling all of the story. And we have to have alternative sources where we can work around the fake news. And that's one of the things I want to talk with you about, because the media has been, they've been in league with the Southern Poverty Law Center for quite some time. And under the last administration, we saw agencies such as the FBI working in league with the Southern Poverty Law Center, which, by the way, I just full disclosure for our folks, has labeled the Family Research Council a hate group. You make reference to this in your letter to the FBI, which tomorrow is the sixth anniversary of the shooting that took place in our building, which the shooter, Floyd Corkins, said it was the Southern Poverty Law Center's map that led him to our building. So I'm interested in your motivation.
Sure. My motivation in part comes from the value that I've gotten as a policymaker from the Family Research Council. You know, I was in the state legislature. I now serve in Congress representing an area in Florida. And I use the tools from the Family Research Council to help in the review of legislation. So when the Southern Poverty Law Center labeled the Family Research Council a hate group, I started to wonder, you know, what influence this organization had. I mean, it's got such an innocuous name. I mean, Southern Poverty Law Center, sounds like mom and apple pie, right? But the reality is this is a shadow group for the far left to try to silence mainstream Christian and conservative voices. So if you understand that is really what the SPLC is, they are a cloak, they are a mask, a shadow group that helps to silence Christians and conservatives. Our own FBI has been using the SPLC to help them identify hate groups. This is what's really troubling to me. If a private organization wants to engage in their private activity, we'll go win in the marketplace of ideas. But what's not fair is when we've got the government of the United States working with an anti-Christian group to kind of redefine truth, right? To redefine, you know, what constitutes acceptable mainstream doctrine. And so I want to get to the bottom of this. I want to know why the FBI is working with them. I want to know to what extent is the SPLC directing FBI activities. Are they able, for example, to recommend investigations into groups like the Family Research Council, for good sakes? And I got to tell you, Tony, you know, even just a couple of years ago, I would have thought it would have been crazy for this to be happening in the United States of America. But after serving on the Judiciary Committee for 2 years, after seeing what people in our own government did to Donald Trump while he was a candidate and even some while he's been president, I start to believe more and more that we've got to be on our toes asking the right questions so that we have transparency and we can figure out who our government is working with and what their motivations are.
So, Congressman Gates, is this, you know, we hear a lot about the shadow government. Is that the shadow government working with these leftist groups to try to undermine, as you said, the current administration, but also the conservative voices on the outside that support those conservative initiatives?
That's the question. We don't know the extent to which the FBI is paying people at the SPLC for source material, to what extent they're working jointly on investigations, to what extent the SPLC is able to use the arm of the government to advance a far left-wing anti-Christian agenda. And so that's why I want to ask the questions. Here's what's not acceptable, Tony. What's not acceptable is that our government would just tell us, well, yes, we have an association with these people, but we're not going to explain the depths of that. That seems to be the initial resistance I've gotten from the FBI, and it's one of the reasons why I'm calling on hearings so that we can bring the FBI officials before the Congress, before the cameras, before the American people, and get to the bottom of this, because most Americans, most people in my district would be shocked if they learned that the FBI was working with a group that was labeling doctrinal mainstream Christian thought as hate speech.
Well, Congressman Gates, for the FBI to tell you, well, we're not going to tell you the depth of the relationship, I mean, that is the role of Congress, the oversight. And the House Judiciary Committee has oversight of the FBI, the Department of Justice. The last Congress held the Attorney General in contempt of Congress for not providing information. So you have a right to know as a member of Congress. They are supposed to answer your questions.
You're right, and sometimes I just feel like the people that are working against this president, that are working against conservatives, they do everything they can to flood the zone. You know, I mean, look, we got to continue to hold hearings on Bruce Orr, a senior Justice Department official whose wife was working to write up these lies about President Trump. We've got to hold hearings on the extent to which Peter Strzok may have contaminated evidence before his firing. And yes, we need to hold hearings on whether or not the Southern Poverty Law Center has been able to weave their way and commingle with the powers of government to hurt Christians and to label Christians and to really unfairly silence our ability to make our point and to share our message. Because at the end of the day, that's all we want. We want the chance to be able to speak about the universal truths in the universe and our lives. We want to be able to make our argument about how we can better serve our fellow man. And I think we win if we can do that. But if these groups are able to constrain the discussion, then I think we really get put behind the eight ball.
Well, Congressman Gates, I think that is an excellent point, and it's what we advocate for. Look, I served in the Marine Corps. I've been a police officer. I've held public office, always defended the right of those I disagree with to speak.
Yep.
I believe that we can win in the marketplace of ideas. I'm not afraid to defend what I believe. Truth is easy to defend. Now, it's not. It can be difficult in circumstances because of the opposition, but you don't have to. I mean, the truth is so, it's easy because it's revealed all around us. You have to really be blinded not to see it. Of course, we live in an increasingly dark culture, but the left doesn't see it that way. They want to silence the debate. They do not want equal access. And so I think that's what's so troubling about our own government potentially partnering with those groups that are seeking to silence the conservative voice.
No, that's a great point.
Let me get your thoughts. You mentioned Peter Strzok, the FBI agent, infamous agent, known for texting with Lisa Page, his girlfriend there at the FBI. Is this a step in the right direction that the FBI fired him yesterday?
Yes. Peter Strzok should have been fired long ago. I'm glad he's been fired now. What he has done to infect multiple investigations with personal political bias has really been a disservice to so many people in law enforcement. And I want to say at the outset, you know, 95% of the work I've seen from the FBI has been exceptional, and I'm grateful that people are willing to express their patriotism through service in law enforcement, and you're obviously a great example of that, Tony. But Peter Strzok is what really kind of can give a bad name to the people doing the good work. What's most notable to me is that Strzok was talking about impeachment only a few days after the investigation had begun, and he was talking about exoneration for Hillary Clinton before she had even been interviewed. And so it showed the extent to which this wasn't a person who was following facts. He was trying to contrive facts to achieve a political objective. What we've got to further discover is the extent to which evidence may have been contaminated, whether investigations into, for example, Hillary Clinton's email server should have continued to persist and not been smothered by this guy who wasn't doing right by the country.
Well, Matt, we're going to have to leave it there, but I'm going to have you back on when you get a response from the FBI. We're very interested in their answer to your questions. Congressman Matt Gaetz, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. And again, I tell you, we bring you the conservative voices from Capitol Hill, and there's a lot of them. And you just don't always hear or see them in the mainstream media. All right, when we come back, a private meeting yesterday between White House National Security Advisor John Bolton and the Turkish ambassador to the U.S. did not resolve the growing tensions between the two countries, as Turkey has refused to release American pastor Andrew Brunson. What is the White House promising to do next? We'll talk about it with Ambassador Sam Brownback. Don't go away.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, civil liberties attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, senior research fellow in the technology policy program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Let me remind you, get that app. Stand firm. Go to the App Store or follow the links over at TonyPerkins.com. All right, last week, President Trump doubled tariffs on imports of Turkish steel and aluminum, which contributed to a precipitous fall of the lira. The White House announced today that there is more to come unless Pastor Andrew Brunson is released. As I mentioned yesterday, the White House National Security Director John Bolton met with the Turkish ambassador to the United States. No resolution. What's next? With us now is Ambassador Large for International Religious Freedom, our good friend Sam Brownback. Ambassador, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it.
Well, a lot, you have not slowed down since you've taken on the new post as Ambassador of International Religious Freedom, very successful ministerial to advance religious freedom a few weeks ago. But, of course, this case with Andrew Brunson has remained in the spotlight as the Secretary of State's been working on it, the President's been working on it, the Vice President's working on it, you've been working on it, National Security Director's been working on it. Where do we stand? Are we any closer?
Well, I think we're closer in that the administration has taken decisive, aggressive action, and I am so thankful for that. I mean, this president has really stepped up and said, look, you've got one of ours, an American citizen. You're holding him illegally. This is wrong. I've raised it with you diplomatically. I've raised it multiple times. We've raised it in a number of different venues. You haven't acted, so I will. And I think that moves us towards resolution. Now, we'll see what the Erdogan government and what President Erdogan in Turkey does. And so far, he's not indicated any willingness to make the situation right by sending Pastor Brunson back. And then that means, well, okay, we're going to escalate it further. The Turkish economy has taken a huge hit off of this. This case, Tony, all along has not made any sense to me why the president of Turkey is acting this way, why the Turkish government is acting this way on Pastor Brunson. But they have, and I'm delighted this administration has taken such aggressive action in response.
Yeah, it is, and I think that's something that people need to realize, that I know we want to see Pastor Brunson released, But the fact that we have an administration that's advocating for them, when under the previous administration, we saw genocide go unchecked in the Middle East. We saw a tremendous rise in religious persecution around the globe. This administration taking it head on. Do you think that this could be an excuse from Erdogan as a means of exiting NATO and moving away from his Western alliances?
Well, I don't know. I have no privy to that type of information, but he's not acting like much of an ally, and he hasn't acted like much of an ally for some period of time. This is a clear religious freedom case, and it's also a clear case about an American citizen. And you wouldn't expect an ally to treat another ally's citizen this way.
I met with Ambassador Bolton a week before I left town to discuss the issue. Any insight from his meeting yesterday with the Turkish ambassador?
None other than what I've read, that you've read as well, that, Bolton's saying what everybody else has said, that, look, until you let Brunson loose, there's not much to talk about here. This is a clear case. He is being held illegally. There's no case against him. And release him. And we've asked quietly, we've asked privately, we've asked consistently. And you won't, and so we're going to continue to apply the pressure until you do.
Now, obviously, we want to stay focused on Pastor Brunson until he's released, but there are many other cases around the country, and we're seeing in some spots, such as India, we're seeing an increase of hostility in India, Pakistan, toward religious minorities. And I know you've got some activities coming up as it pertains to, I believe, India.
Well, I met with the Pakistani ambassador about the situation there. They've got these blasphemy laws that people get sent to jail and can be capital punishment. And they have people on capital punishment for blasphemy laws that are often misused, or can be mob violence can happen with them as well. And we've been pushing Pakistan very aggressively. Secretary Tillerson put them on the special watch list for a country of being potentially a country of particular concern. And then you just see mob violence, too, towards religious minorities, particularly Christians in Pakistan. Christians and Muslims in India, in particular, not exclusively, but particular there, where things will just pop up. You've got a small church in India somewhere, and a mob will gather outside it and destroy the building and kill people inside. And this is just happening with way too much frequency. We raise it. We ask the authorities to protect these religious minorities. Sometimes there's good statements coming out at a national level, at a local level, often not. We've just got to keep pressing them about this issue, because this is growing and escalating so much.
We discussed this briefly today at our pastor's briefing outside of Cincinnati, Ohio, the issue of the persecuted church in particular, along with other religious minorities around the globe. What can, in our final minute here together, what can the church here in the United States be doing on this issue?
Yeah, I hope they applaud the president about what he's doing to stand up for somebody that's been taken a hostage overseas. I hope they write and they contact their legislators that religious freedom is an important issue to them domestically and internationally, particularly internationally, for as far as what I'm focused on. And they can't. And it does matter when they're out at town hall meetings if they'll raise these things as well.
Ambassador Sam Brownback, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks for taking time out to join us with this update on Pastor Brunson.
Yeah, sure. You bet. God bless you, Tony. We'll see you.
All right. Our good friend Sam Brownback, Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom. Pray for him. He's doing important work. All right. When we come back, I mentioned we're here outside of Cincinnati, Ohio, for a Watchman on the Wall pastor's briefing that we held today. And the host pastor is going to be joining us when we return. Barry Clardy. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch right after this.
feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And if you have not yet downloaded the Stand Firm app, I encourage you to do so. Your smartphone has an opportunity to become even smarter. Download the app, Stand Firm. It gives you all the information connected with the Family Research Council. You get the daily update. You can actually get alerts as to when Washington Watch is coming on, so you won't miss it. And if you have friends that live in areas where they don't actually have it on a terrestrial station, you can get the app and, well, listen right there in your pocket. All right, as I mentioned earlier, we're in Cincinnati, Ohio, for FRC's Watchmen on the Wall regional pastor briefing. We do these briefings all across the country, and we had a great day here at the Princeton Pike Church of God, where we had about 100 pastors from this area joined together for a series of messages just to be encouraged to pray, to preach, and to partner with one another. And joining us now is Pastor Barry Clardy. He is the pastor here at Princeton Pike Church of God and our host today. And we're so grateful for his hospitality. Pastor Barry, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
You've been a part of the Watchmen. In fact, I've been at your church here about a decade ago. But you've really engaged, and you've challenged your congregation to engage. And it's not always been that way, but you've seen increasingly the need. Share with our listeners a little bit about how your church has engaged the local culture.
Well, Tony, what we did was evaluate the need of the culture based upon not what people were saying, but what we were experiencing. And the classic cultural problems that could be repeated just about in any community, any city, any village, is what we see not only here, but everywhere across the country, whether it's opioids, whether it's the protection of the unborn, just various issues that were inundating our community and impacting the culture itself, decaying the culture. And so we understood the power of the church and the presence of the church was important. And we had to do more than pray. We had to put love into action. And so we started to asking ourselves the question, what are the problems? And then we came to this conclusion. Problems have not really changed. They've only increased. But the greater problem that we saw was the apathy of the communities of faith. The apathy to have passion about it, but no compassion to do something about it. So we started educating, informing our congregation. And then along with the education and information, we gave a challenge for transformation, to be a part of the process, not just to wait to political fires burn or things happen within our community that were hot spots for us as people within the community of faith, but to see ourselves as an extension to our community. We are a part of our community. And so then with the education and with the information and the challenge of transformation, we literally took the strong step of courage and asked our people to not only get involved in the process of learning about what the needs were, but then to be a part of the solution. Mm-hmm. We challenged our people to get involved in political office and to step up to the plate and to engage themselves not only at the seasons of voting, but every other season of the year to impact culture at every level. So we challenged our people, and many of them took the challenge and are highly not only engaged, but are now on the front lines making a difference.
In fact, you have some members of your church that as a result of that challenge went and ran for public office and were elected.
They did. In fact, many of them who ran for public office had never done so in their life, but they were challenged to think generationally. Not just motivated by the now, but what kind of country and culture were we giving birth to for their sons and our daughters and our grandchildren and great-grandchildren? And that in itself became a platform to which most were motivated to want to make a difference where it counts. And they ran, and for most of them, they won. And they found out the greatest fear of not being able to win was overcome just by the willingness to run for the race and to be a part of the solution.
Before we run out of time, I got two final questions here. How did your church respond to that challenge? I mean, did they embrace it?
They not only embraced it, they applauded it. The greatest fear for most pastors is when you speak on issues that are important to today that the culture says is going to be divisive if you take the courage to speak on it, was just the opposite of my experience. Not only did the church respond to it, but culture responded to it. Because what I found that many started showing up that heard that leadership and community faith leaders was going to actually speak to an issue and not skirt around it. And so sometimes that courage is enough to even cause culture to come to hear the answer.
Pastor Barry, one final question, 30 seconds. To pastors who may be wondering, what's the value of connecting with other pastors through a network like Watchman?
Well, one person said it well. Those who do not network will one day find themselves not working. And so I think the power of building bridges instead of barriers is key, because information and transformation happens as a teamwork. And I personally have been made better for it. The group of pastors in the Cincinnati and greater Cincinnati area have been made better because of being a part of Watchman on the Wall.
Pastor Barry Clardy, thank you so much again for hosting us today and for joining us here on Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony, for the opportunity.
All right, pastors, if you'd like to find out more about how you can be a part of a regional briefing of Watchmen on the Wall, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, don't go away. More Washington Watch to come. When we return, General Jerry Boykin joins me to talk about President Trump yesterday at Fort Drum signing the National Defense Authorization Act into law. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, civil liberties attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, senior research fellow in the technology policy program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
No longer are we apologizing for America. Instead, we are now standing up for America. It's called America First, if that's okay with you. We're standing up for our military, and we're standing up for our great American flag. We're standing for our flag.
That was President Donald Trump yesterday signing the 2019 National Defense Authorization Act, or H.R. 5515, during a visit to Fort Drum in upstate New York. This measure actually provides additional funding in the process of rebuilding our nation's military, giving a pay raise to our men and women who serve in uniform, providing new equipment, replacing aging equipment, and basically filling the void of where equipment didn't exist, as we've seen over the last decade, where parts for planes in museums were being taken off so that they could keep some of the planes flying. Well, joining me now to discuss the importance of this, as well as some current events of what's happening in Afghanistan as it pertains to our military, is General Jerry Boykin, retired lieutenant general, now executive vice president of the Family Research Council after 36 and a half years in the United States Army, a founding member of Delta. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. It's great to be back on with you.
All right. The president yesterday signing the Defense Authorization Act, National Defense Authorization Act, into law, $716 billion going to fund our military, an increase over last year, which was actually a significant increase. Are we on the path of rebuilding our military?
Well, we certainly are, Tony. And one of the key things here was it actually provided a 2.6% pay raise for all the troops, which they have not had anything of that magnitude in quite some time. And remember that at the end of the day, the technology is not nearly as important as the people. This is all about the people. Now, that said, this is the beginning of the process of restoring a military that has been neglected for 8 years under the Obama administration between budget cuts, program budget cuts, and sequestration. This is the beginning, but we should not kid ourselves that this budget alone is not going to repair or restore all the things that are needed in the military.
General, I remember when I was in the Marine Corps back in the late 1980s, you know, coming out of the 70s after Vietnam, the military somewhat neglected, Carter never very favorable toward the military. Ronald Reagan really being the first president after Vietnam to focus on our military and rebuilding it. This has an impact upon the morale of those who serve when you've got the commander-in-chief saying, I'm going to take care of you. I got your back.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I mean, there are several things. One is you want to see your commander-in-chief demonstrate that he's proud to be an American. And that boosts morale just about as much as anything. And I think that our president has clearly shown that he is proud to be an American, and that he does care about our military. And that goes a long ways to boosting their morale. But then the next step of that is putting the money into what we know to be a necessary and essential components of our military. I'll tell you, the morale has picked up greatly in our military today.
Of course, a lot of that is dependent upon having the material to do the job that you've been called to do. And we're, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you had aging equipment, and we've got new fighter jets, we've got new Black Hawks, we got all this new equipment that's being pledged through this funding. But the other part of the morale aspect, it has to do with leadership and has to do with the military being focused on its mission rather than on the previous mission of the previous administration, which was the social experimentation. We're still suffering the consequences of that.
Yeah, you know, that the consequences to elections are sometimes very enduring. And right now, we've got policies that were implemented under the Obama administration that have not been rolled back yet. And quite frankly, as sad as it is, may not be rolled back. You're never going to probably roll back the whole don't ask, don't tell, and say, no, we really don't. We want to change that back to the way it used to be. That's unlikely. It's just not going to happen. So we are living with the consequences of not only neglect, but social experimentation. And quite frankly, that is still deeply embedded because there were a lot of people that were brought into DOD on the civilian side, but there are also military officers that were promoted to upper levels that are still living out the Obama agenda of these social experiments. Women in the infantry is a good example. That was a social experiment. But it can, in no way does it enhance readiness, and I know many would argue that, but it doesn't. So we it's going to take Mr. Trump probably two terms to bring this back down to where we can say that he has truly begun to restore military readiness through the focus of our training and preparation. And that has got to be on war fighting and nothing else.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. My guest, General Jerry Boykin, discussing yesterday the president making a speech at Fort Drum in upstate New York as he ceremonially signed the National Defense Authorization Act into law. Now, here's another clip of what he had to say yesterday as it pertained to what this bill would fund.
With this new authorization, we will increase the size and strength of our military by adding thousands of new recruits to active duty, reserve, and National Guard units, including 4,000 new active duty soldiers. And we will replace aging tanks, aging planes and ships with the most advanced and lethal technology ever developed, and hopefully we'll be so strong we'll never have to use it. But if we ever did, nobody has a chance.
He sounds very much like Ronald Reagan's peace through strength, that, you know, by rebuilding our nation's military, it's not necessarily so you use it, but it's so you don't have to use it, because if you're strong, you're less likely to be challenged.
Yeah, it's called deterrence. Who wants to take on a military that's stronger than their own? And quite frankly, we are today the strongest military on the planet. But Russia is investing big money in their military capabilities, trying to restore them. And we know that China is investing a lot in theirs. In fact, they probably have the most modern aircraft carrier in the world today, because they, over a long period of time, they put a lot of money and resources into building that. Now, that doesn't mean it's an immediate threat, because it takes a long time, I'm told by my Navy friends, to learn to operate carriers. And it's the most complex thing I've ever seen in my 36-plus years in the military, is carrier operations. So it's not an immediate threat, but the point is they are growing their military into force projection element. You know, it's always been designed to defend China, but now they have the capabilities with their ships and their long-range airplanes to actually project power, which is something China has never really done, unless it was in the immediate vicinity of China, like Vietnam or something. So that is something to be concerned about. Well, our military is now buying 77 new F-35 strike fighters, 13 new ships, several billion dollars worth of mobility vehicles like Hummers and Humvees, and we're even going into a new tank program to replace the old M1 Abrams. So the world is watching us. The world is seeing that we are serious about being able to defend ourselves and our allies.
I want to go back, General Boykin, to something we were just talking about a moment ago, because the president in that clip we just played also talked about personnel, new recruits, rebuilding the military, bringing more people into the military. The military has had a little bit of a challenge in meeting their recruitment numbers and their retention numbers. And a part of that goes back, I mean, yes, it's somewhat about equipment. But more than that, it's about the environment that has been created by the policies of the previous administration.
That's exactly right, Tony. And I've talked to an awful lot of people that would otherwise have stayed in the military that got out during the Obama era because they just they didn't feel like that the country respected them. They didn't feel like the president was focused on winning wars, which is what our military is about. And they were tired of the social experiments. And I talked to a doctor, an anesthesiologist, that told me he was the chief of anesthesiology at one of the major military hospitals. He said, I'm getting out because of these social experiments. He said, I'm not going to be part of it. I don't have to do this anymore. I've served my country. And that's the attitude of a lot of people below his level that left our military. The other thing is this. There were a lot of people promoted to the higher echelons within our military, not because they were great war fighters, not because they had a good combat record, but because they were willing to support the Obama agenda on this social experiment. And that is probably the hardest thing, is moving those people out and bringing in a generation, you know, the next generation of leaders that have had combat experience, that have had real leadership experiences and have been successful at that. And that's probably the hardest thing. And that's like a decade, you know, that because what happened was bringing these other leaders up that just because they would support the Obama agenda, you had to get rid of some leaders, some people that were senior to them. Well, the code word for the military is we don't have another assignment for you, which means it's time for you to retire. Well, there were a lot of them that were told it's time to retire. And they reached way down and grabbed people and brought them up who were willing to support the Obama agenda. That is the toughest thing about restoring our military, is getting that next generation of committed leaders in there that have the experience and the willingness and commitment to actually lead in tough times.
Is there any way to accelerate that process? You say it's a decade, the natural course that it takes. Can it be accelerated?
Well, there are things you can do on the margins to accelerate. You can go deep. You can do some deep selections in some people. You know, you don't. Here's something most people don't realize: if you're a brigadier general, you actually don't ever have to be promoted to 2-star to go to 3-star or 4-star. You can actually skip over several ranks. So yeah, it's possible to do that. Now you do have to be selected by a board to make general officer to begin with, or flag officer. But you actually don't have to. And I've known several people that has actually happened to. So, yes, there is a way to do that. But you what you don't want to do is promote somebody too early, get them in there too quickly, without making darn sure that they have the experience that they need, or without using them up too quickly, and then you lose them to a natural attrition. They've had the top job and now they're out, you know. So it's a tough thing to do, but look, I think the president is doing a really good job. I think the morale is much higher in our military today than it was before he came in, and I am really hopeful that he's going to tackle this problem in an effective way.
Again, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, retired member of the United States Army, my guest, discussing the president's signing yesterday of the National Defense Authorization Act at Fort Drum in front of military troops. General, I want to switch gears just a little bit to talk about Afghanistan. You know, a lot of last year's funding enhanced our presence and activity in Afghanistan, but we're seeing what some are describing as a resurgence of the Taliban in Afghanistan. What's happening on the ground in Afghanistan?
Yeah, there's a cycle of this. The Taliban will look like they're on the ropes, and then all of a sudden they'll come back. And they have to, because their recruiting to the Taliban ranks is dependent upon them being able to show success, them being able to show that they're effective against not only the the government of Afghanistan, but also against the foreign invaders, the Americans that are there providing support to them. Now, the first time that they really made a comeback was when we went into Iraq and we turned everything over to NATO. And NATO, generally speaking, is not effective in that kind of battle space. So the Taliban resurged then because the NATO forces really wouldn't fight them except the Americans and the Brits. And they've made a couple of little comebacks before. This is cyclic, but this is a time when the majority of the Americans are not in combat roles. They're actually in training roles, and they're taking on what they know will be easier targets, and that's the Afghan National Army.
Is there a pathway forward for success in Afghanistan?
We have to stay the course in the short term. We have to stay the course and really try and build a credible army and military, police force there in Afghanistan so that at some point we can extract ourselves.
General Jerry Boykin, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Great to be with you here in Cincinnati as we did another Watchman on the Wall pastors briefing. I know you're going to be later this week in Missouri, right?
Springfield. I'll be in Springfield with pastors there in Springfield, and we're looking forward to it. Bass Pro Shop is there.
All right. All right, folks. Hope you'll catch him there in Missouri. For now, we're signing off. Thanks so much for joining us today. I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.